This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Look, we're going to shake things up.
On Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
I don't think we're asking the right question. I think the question we should be asking is, do you believe in this thing or not?
The Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
What do you mean? Of course martial arts training is relevant.
Now your hosts.
Let me save you some time. Get comfortable.
WSBT Radio's Sean Steyer.
Let's get started.
And former Irish quarterback, Evan Sharpley.
Glad to have you with us today on a frigid, freezing day outside in and around South Bend, Elkhart, Mishawaka, Michiana, wherever you happen to be today. Maybe you're listening online and you're lucky enough to be in a warm locale. But I tell you what, while it's cold outside, it is nice and warm and toasty inside.
We got a fire behind us.
That's right. Four Winds Casino, South Bend. That's where we are today. And we're right in front of the fireplace. We're right in the entryway.
We should roast some marshmallows.
In the atrium. That's a fantastic idea.
I like that.
And there's even a bench that you can sit on, a nice padded bench that you can sit on and hang out with us here today for the next hour. We are giving away those limited edition green Shamrock baseball caps. So the first 30 listeners out here get one of those caps. You can also register to win the DeWalt portable radio. We're giving away one of those at the end of the show today. And also today, I mean, if you need any other reasons to come out to Four Winds South Bend, here's the big one. They are giving away a total of $50,000 in cash and prizes throughout the day today. Starting at 1 o'clock, they're going to be drawing winners from 1 until 10 o'clock. Every hour, another winner. And included in that, you can get a new TV just in time for the big game, which, of course, is coming up a week from Sunday. So you can do all that out here at Four Winds Casino.
Are you drawing? Are you doing the drawing?
Like actual pulling? Yeah. I'll let you do the drawing today.
Oh, okay.
I think I did it last time. I'm going to let you do it.
Well, for the part of the 50,000, are you doing that one?
I don't think I get my hands in there.
Okay.
I wish I could. But, again, warm, toasty out here. We're right in the atrium, the main entrance to Four Winds Casino, South Bend. So stop on by and see us. Evan Sharpley, Sean Steyers. We're here until 1 o'clock like we are every Friday on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. A lot to get to in today's
always
show.
Always so much to get to.
There always
Let's
is.
Get
I
to
mean,
it.
How do you jam it all into to one
I don't think
hour?
You can do it.
That's the question.
If there's anybody that can, though, it's you and me.
Yeah, that's right. No lube today, though. if you saw us on Twitter, there was an unfortunate typo, but we're giving away hats. Four Winds is giving away cash and prizes. We're giving away a radio. But no lube to give away. Notre Dame women beat Tennessee last night, 77-62. It's their 12th straight win. Jackie Young with a triple-double, 16 points, 12 rebounds, 10 assists, the seventh triple-double in Notre Dame women's basketball history. And interestingly enough, the last two have taken place in the state of Tennessee.
Cool.
Lindsey Allen 2 years ago at Chattanooga did it. And so Notre Dame women's basketball's last two doubles in the state of Tennessee.
Just keep playing there.
That's
Schedule
right.
more games in Tennessee.
Yep, that's right.
The ladies are playing well right now.
They are. They're on a roll. And I looked because I saw a retweet last night, and five starters, 29 plus minutes. Everybody else for Notre Dame played basically some. I think the next most was like 9 minutes or something like that. It seems like Muffet McGraw has kind of. Really pared down the rotation.
It's probably getting that time of the year.
Yeah, well, I mean, she's got more healthy players than she did last year because last year it was all by necessity. But it looks like she's really pared it down and saying, look, we're just going with our top players.
Pedal to the metal right now.
Guns a-blazing. It worked for them last year. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, it's you want to be peaking and playing your best ball towards the end of the year, and you want to rely on the people that have, I think, have gotten you there and been big contributors and – I mean, we're getting close to the end of the season here. You know, they're going to want to finish strong. And
yep.
I mean, we're just around the corner from the tournament, it feels like. I know it's a little bit. We got a little bit of time. But that's one of my favorite times of the year is once we get into tournament time.
It's really closer than you think, though, because, like, we're sitting here January 25th. It's going to be February next week. And
it's a short month.
Really start to stretch drive. And it is.
You blink, it might be over.
That's right. We're a month away from boys sectional basketball tournaments, the The draw is like 3 weeks
away.
The
girls start this week.
They do.
Yeah.
This coming up week. So, and which is really amazing, and it's like, where did that season go? But the girls start a few weeks earlier than the boys now. Their season started the beginning of November. So, yeah, they're almost through. For the women, Notre Dame women, third win in Knoxville ever. They've now won 8 of their last 9 against Tennessee. 21-8 all time against the Vols, but they've won 8 of their last 9. And that rivalry has obviously, it's become shifted. More of a rivalry. Yeah, it's shifted definitely in the last decade or so, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Tennessee perennially was, you know, one of the top teams for a long time. And I think Notre Dame was maybe kind of that third or fourth team. And now you're looking at, you know, how things have kind of changed. I think you talk about Notre Dame and Connecticut maybe on a little bit of a different level.
Right.
But certainly Tennessee is still in that upper echelon of teams within college basketball. But, you know, what Muff McGraw's been able to do for the program really over the last 5+ years has been pretty, you know, has been pretty great to see. And unseating some programs that historically have been very, very good.
Very, very true. Arike Agbuwale with 28 points last night for the Irish women. Some news from the Senior Bowl. A couple of Notre Dame players, as the Senior Bowl is going on tomorrow in Mobile, Alabama. And Drew Tranquil made the practice team of the week. Dexter Williams made the, that was the defensive practice team of the week. Dexter Williams, the offensive team of the week. The Senior Bowl guys tweeted out 4 players offense, 4 players defense. So Drew Tranquil made the defensive, Dexter Williams the offensive. And I saw some interesting little notes, because like when you look at a guy like Tavon Coney, I mean, he doesn't lack for athleticism, speed, all that kind of stuff, but Drew Tranquil is the guy who everyone's talking about as far as draft, and I think that safety experience helps him, even though he obviously was not built to play safety at this level or beyond. Those pass coverage skills seem to really help him out. And when we look at offenses now and the way offenses are going, I think that's definitely kind of set him apart in terms of draft eligible type linebackers.
Yeah, Sean, you mean you need guys that can play multiple positions. You know, for Drew Tranquil, I mean, he's going to be immediate impact guy as far as just his effort level, his athleticism on special teams. You know, he may be a year away in a program of contributing maybe on the defensive side of the football, but, you know, a good example of that is Matthias Farley with the Colts. You know, he played his way into a bigger role just by what he did on special teams for a year or two. So I could see Drew fit that mold. Both those guys, you know, they're high IQ football players. They understand how the game works. I think, you know, if they get into the right scheme around, you know, a good coordinator who knows how to use their specific skill set, I think you can find a place for him. I'm not surprised. You know, Drew's a guy that I think that would light it up in practice. Mm-hmm. You know, Coney might be a guy that when the lights come on in the game, he might shine a little bit differently. You know, everyone's built a you know, as far as how their preparation looks, and it's a Senior Bowl. You want to turn some heads too, but this is a long process. You'll go through the Senior Bowl, certainly getting ready and going through combine prep and pro days. So there's some time still,
right?
Where you know you want to do your best and put your best foot forward. But it's great to see guys like Drew Tranquil, like Dexter Williams, getting some recognition here. You know, in what's the first step in them potentially making it to the next level.
We're going to talk some football and some NFL and what's been going on this week with all the controversy from last week. We'll do some of that a little bit later in the show. I wanted to start off with some baseball because Evan Sharpley, of course, not just a former Notre Dame football player, also drafted by the Seattle Mariners, played in their organization, baseball player at Notre Dame, two-sport guy. So I wanted to start with some of the Baseball Hall of Fame and some of the other stuff surrounding that. So first of all, Edgar Martinez, Mike Mussina, Roy Halladay, Mariano Rivera, all voted in to the Baseball Hall of Fame this week. Any problems?
Not really. I mean, I love Edgar Martinez. I know he was a DH, but he was really good. he could hit a baseball. You know, within where he was playing and what he was needed to do, he didn't really need a glove at that time. He played on some pretty talented teams, and it wasn't his role. But man, he could swing the bat. So, you know, for him, I think is great. Mussina, you know, that was maybe of the group a guy who I. I think a little bit, yeah, but still certainly I think there's arguments you could make that are deserving. And then you've got Halliday and then obviously Rivera. I mean, Rivera is a no-doubter in my mind, and I grew up watching a lot of Yankees baseball. Jeter was my favorite player. He was just, you know, down the road playing in Kalamazoo, and you know, I wanted to be like him. So I watched a lot of Yankees games. I mean, what he did in the postseason, I think the stat that is the funniest to me is more people have, whether or not you believe there's been a moon landing or not, there's been more people that have stepped foot on the moon that have scored a run against Mariano Rivera in the postseason.
The people who have, yeah, exactly.
Isn't that nuts? That's crazy.
So where do you stand on moon landing?
I don't know. I enjoy watching. I dig all the conspiracy stuff. I'll watch all that stuff.
All right. So Rivera, and I'll just say Mussina is the guy that I think I have the biggest issue with. And I realize he's got the high ERA, and people talk about, oh, the AL East. I mean, he was done playing in 2008. It's not like the AL East has always been the division. I mean, the career started in 1991. I've always said he was playing on, now not early 90s, but by the time it got to the mid 90s, and then before he went to the Yankees in 2001, I mean, he was playing on some pretty good Baltimore teams, mm-hmm. still, and playing on some really good Yankee teams. Got a ton of run support, and so that's like, I look at him. I mean, and if you flip flopped him and Curt Schilling, I think Schilling probably wins 300 games if he's pitching for those teams in that stretch.
I mean, and that's hard, too. I mean, you know, Schilling didn't make it. Clemens didn't make it. And we'll talk a little bit more on, you know, on the PED users.
Right.
But, you know, that's two pretty good pitchers, and you're including Mussina in it. You know, that's...
He's good, don't get me wrong.
He is. Yeah, so...
I still think he benefited quite a bit.
Yeah, he did.
From run support.
And that's okay, though.
He had a sub-3 ERA once in his career.
Moose.
And I want to
make you're not buying it, then.
I want to make sure I got that right.
Yeah, you're not buying it.
No, I'm not. Okay.
Good with Edgar, though? Good?
Yeah.
I mean... Good with Roy?
I mean, you can... There's an argument to be made. I mean, when you look at Edgar Martinez's across the board numbers and the fact that he was a DH, mm-hmm. I definitely think he was gaining some traction the last few years.
Mm-hmm. I think
Harold Baines getting in helps him, though, and I think Harold Baines is going to offset a lot of arguments now forward. Yeah, I don't think it's good at all.
No.
So Rivera becomes the first Hall of Famer to receive 100% of the vote on a ballot. And I saw earlier this week a writer say that the reason there was never 100% or before now was because there was less transparency. You know, there's no social media, obviously, until really just the last decade or so, and internet and the whole thing. And I mean, really, even, you know, TV, cable, the whole thing. It's just completely different now than, say, when Ted Williams, Willie Mays, any of those guys are playing who never got 100%. Do you buy that argument?
I mean, it's got to play a little bit of a role. You know, there's a lot more discussion about it. You know, there's more information that's readily available to people. I don't remember, you know, when these votes would come in, you know, maybe 8 to 10 years ago, it being talked about nearly as much. And so I'm sure that social media plays into that, but you're seeing more stats. You're seeing comparisons between this, you know, player A and player B. Mm-hmm. You know, and looking at a guy like Edgar Martinez, you know, there were several hitters that were, well, position players that were getting in before he was, and he had more hits, had more RBIs, his value, all of those things. And, I mean, we could talk about how stats have changed, too. If you're looking at, you know, wins above replacement, and you look at some of those things, you know, not just looking at maybe your historical stats of what's their batting average, how many hits do they have. Now you're looking at, well, how many of those, you know, hits are extra base hits? They're not all singles, right? How many RBI do they have over the course of their career? So I think it's, you know, I think data has changed, and I think the social side of it, it's become a little more collaborative on, you know, where is their value from each player. And it's probably over the last couple of years has taken off even more.
Well, and I think, like, for example, Curt Schilling at nearly 61% of the vote this year. And I think that when you look at his one loss totals, because he only has a little bit more than 200 wins. He had great strikeout to walk numbers, and obviously he was really good in the postseason. But again, he played for one of the better Phillies teams at the time in 1993 before he ended up going to the Diamondbacks. And great in the postseason and all that. Didn't necessarily have the regular season numbers, but now with analytics, I think it's made his case. But at the same time, what's working against him is himself right now, because whether it's fair or not, just some of the thing, just the way that he's portraying himself and the way he's gone out against some riders. Again, whether it's fair or not, whether you're supposed to take that into account or not, we all have free speech, but that doesn't mean that you're absolved from any retribution that comes with free speech. And I think it's come back to bite him a little bit.
I think so. I don't think anybody will publicly admit it, but you know, I think that will play a little bit of a role.
But I do think he's going to get in here within the next.
I mean, what
years.
It should be, it really should be based on what you did on the baseball field,
right,
regardless of what you've said or done. If you know it's warranted within the bylaws, that you haven't broken any of the bylaws, and we'll talk.
But
a little
it cost Terrell Owens too. I mean,
well,
Terrell
yeah.
Owens had Hall of Fame. You know, it's not just exclusive to baseball.
It shouldn't though.
No, it shouldn't. But it's human nature.
Are
it
you
does.
A Hall of Famer based on how you performed? Okay, let's put you in there.
But I mean, that goes back to the whole, like, with Rivera Rivera being 100% and other guys not being 100%, there are a lot of different reasons why different people got left off ballots. Like, some people just didn't like Ted Williams and the way he treated the media. Again, you know, it's really the same thing with Schilling. But there are also other people who would say, well, okay, this guy is on his last year on the ballot, so I'm going to vote for him. This guy still has 9 years to go, so I'm going to leave him off this one. Stuff like that. And again, I think really, and we'll get into the PED argument here in a second, but I think that between the PEDs and the analytics, it's sort of made things, in a lot of people's eyes, more cut and dry and maybe easier. And so Rivera gets in, and now the question is, you know, is Jeter going to be 100% next year? Are we going to start seeing more 100%ers going forward?
I think so.
Does it matter?
Someone had to be first.
Yeah.
I don't think it does matter.
No, I don't either.
You're getting in or you're not, right?
You're in the Hall of Fame or you're not. Harold Baines didn't have to worry about it. We can beat up Harold Baines all we want.
You and Darren Pritchett, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Well, here's a guy, though. Fred McGriff didn't make it this year. It was his 10th year on the ballot, on the writer's ballot. And my question is, especially when you start to compare what Fred McGriff did, would you concede that Fred McGriff was probably clean with 99% certainty, looking at Fred McGriff and his build
from
and the PEDs, whole thing?
I don't mean, who knows?
Well, yeah.
From a
because
maybe, yeah, the other side.
Yeah, or whatever.
Yeah, we don't know that on that side.
But
a cup of coffee.
Right. But when you look at Fred McGriff and his home run total, he's 28th on the home run list. There are 11 players ahead of him on the list who played in his era. On the all-time home run list, and 8 of them have been linked to PEDs.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I'm surprised that the writers didn't give more validity to Fred McGriff and his career than they did, considering he has pretty much a sparkling clean reputation, and the only guys from his era, 8 of 11 from his era who are ahead of him on the all-time home run list have been linked to PED. So I'm surprised that anyone who's weighing that, is he clean, is he not clean, didn't give more value to Fred McGriff in his career.
Yeah, and I know we view it a little bit different, you and I, on this topic. You know, necessarily being
fine.
Right, necessarily being clean shouldn't, you know, that's not the prerequisite to be a Hall of Famer. It's, again, it gets back to your performance. So would I vote for Fred McGriff? Oh, no doubt. You know, it's the conversation that opens up, though, and we're getting to that time period now where a lot of these guys from the juiced era are going to be on these ballots now for a few years. And I'm very intrigued to see, you know, the perception there and how, you know, guys that are perceived clean versus how guys are perceived to be juiced or having done steroids, how they're going to stack up against each other.
I'm going to give you 3 different players. 2 of them are in the Hall of Fame. 1 of them is not.
Okay.
Let's see if you can guess.
All right.
Player A.
Player A.
2,232 hits, .529 slugging percentage, .475 home runs, .1,540 RBIs, .889 OPS, 57.5 WAR. Player B, 2,490 hits, so that's 200 more than the first guy. Mm-hmm. 509 slugging percentage, 20 points lower. 593 home runs, 18 more. 1,550 RBIs, 10 more. 886 on-base percentage, basically a push, and a WAR of 52.6, so a little bit lower. Player C, 2,866 hits, more than either of the other two. 465 slugging percentage, well below the other two. 384 home runs, about 100 less than the other two. 1,628 RBIs, 100 more than the other two. 820 on base, OPS, rather, lower than the other two. 38.7 WAR. So which two, A, B, and C? Do you have a get? Do you want to look at it at the numbers here real quick? I don't have the names written down. Next
who would I say? Who's in and who's not?
Yeah,
I'm gonna say player. I'm gonna say player C is in.
Okay.
And I'm.
Are you looking at the initials?
No,
that I have right
no,
there?
No, I'm not. No. And I'm gonna say, let's see. Let's go with. Let's go with player B then too.
Player B.
So I'm leaving player A out.
Okay. Player A is Willie Stargell. He is in the Hall of Fame, and again, he's got about 200 fewer hits than Fred McGriff. 18 fewer home runs than Fred McGriff. Their OPS for their career is about the same. Yeah. Player C is Harold Baines, who has no business being in the Hall of Fame, but Tony La Russa got him in.
But they like those 2,866 hits.
Apparently
like
so. Yeah. Apparently so. And Fred McGriff, 493 home runs, 509 slug, 886 OPS. Left out. Now he's going to have to rely on Tony La Russa to get him in at some point down the line, right?
Yes.
Hopefully. I mean, I would hope that Tony La Russa makes the same kind of push that he made for his own guy, Harold Baines, from
let's
back in
the
day.
Make it happen.
Yeah, I guess so. So let's turn back to the PEDs, Sean and Sharpley. And again, we are at Four Winds Casino, South Bend. You can stop on out and get one of the free green Shamrock hats, have a chance to win the DeWalt radio. We're out here until 1 o'clock, and they're giving away a total of $50,000 in cash and prizes from 1 o'clock until 10 o'clock every hour, giving away some of those prizes here at Four Winds Casino South Bend, and we are right in the front atrium at Four Winds. So Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, do you think they will, not should they, will they ever get into the Hall of Fame?
That's a good question. That was great. I like what you
did
there.
You like the wording there?
Because I'm going to say they should.
I know you think they should. I know you think they should, and we can
will they?
Jump into that too.
Man, Sean, that's tough to answer. You know, baseball writers they can be a fickle bunch. You know, especially traditionalists and purists who, you know, see a guy like Barry Bonds and a guy like Roger Clemens, and knowing as soon as, you know, they started taking steroids and it was proven to be true, they're on their they're on the naughty list for life. You know, that's something that doesn't change. I think it would be a shame if they don't get in. But I know for a lot of guys, you know, what does that message send? And then also, if you open up that can of worms, there's certainly a lot of other players then as well. So I don't think you're going to see a guy who's a first ballot 100% that did steroids.
No.
I think it's going to take the longevity of you know, being on the ballot for multiple years before they're getting in. I don't think that there's going to be a general consensus in year one.
Clemens got 59.5% of the ballots. Barry Bonds, 59.1%. So they both had slight increases, and they still have 3 years left, so they're going to be interesting. They're just behind where Curt Schilling was, and I talked about him at 60.9%. Then you've got a guy like Larry Walker, 54.6%, the only other person to appear on more than half of the ballots, and he'll be on his final ballot next year, needing a big bump. Again, Fred McGriff left off, but you advocate for the PED guys to get in. Give me your your best
well, it's
shot.
When baseball was the
Why
most fun to watch.
I mean,
guys hitting it, you know, they're hitting it to the other town. I mean, so, you know, if their careers dictate based on performance, you know, did it make them stronger? No doubt. Did it help them with recovery? That's probably the number one reason why most of the guys did it was you're playing a long season. you know, you want to make sure, number one, you're not getting injured, but your performance is not, you know, you get midway through the season and then you start to tank because your body starts to break down. That is the real reason why a lot of these guys were taking these PEDs. You know, you still have to, though. You still have to hit a 90-mile-an-hour slider. You have to hit Mariano Rivera's cutter, you know. You're still facing and having to do arguably the hardest thing to do in sports, and that's hit a baseball. It's hard. It's really hard to do. You know, Bonds was a Hall of Famer before PEDs. I mean, he's a 500-500 guy. I mean, he's in the class all by himself. And I think that even if you take out what, you know, what he did towards the end of his career, he's still going to be a Hall of Famer in my eyes. So I'm looking at the performance side of things, you know, what they did on the field. And was it enhanced? Yes. But I think the main crux of it was, you know, trying to make sure that there wasn't the drop off. But I get it from both sides. I mean, I've been around baseball for a long time, so I never took anything, Sean. So it was like, it was frustrating for me playing with guys that I knew did.
Right.
Where I wanted to just outwork them in the weight room or, you know, whatever it was from a skill side of things. So that part was frustrating for me, but I can appreciate talent. When I turn on highlights and watch Bonds hit, I watch Clemens pitch, when I watch McGuire swing, yes, there's a spot in the Hall of Fame for them.
Here's the problem I have with the Clemens argument, because the reason Boston let Clemens walk was because he was diminishing. He was deteriorating. He was not producing at the same rate as he did back in the mid-80s when he was winning Cy Young's. His last 4 years in Boston, 4.46 ERA, 2.85 ERA, but that was 24 starts, so solid, didn't get a lot of run support, but then 4.18, 4.63, okay? Boston lets him walk, and he goes 2.05 ERA, 2.65 ERA, the two best ERAs that he had had in more than a decade, and that's when we know, I mean, based on, argue whether or not we believe him or the people who say that they were supplying him, and also believe our eyes when we look at his body and see how much different it looked in a pretty short amount of time. And he also went 21 wins, 20 wins, and we can argue whether or not wins mean anything. But he was dominating in those 2 years in Toronto, as dominating as he had been since 1986 and 87, a decade plus prior to that.
That HGH is something special.
That's the problem specific to Clemens that I have is, I mean, his career was all but done, and maybe he lingers for a handful of years without taking something, but it's probably done before the year 2000 if he doesn't resort to PEDs.
Thank you, science.
And Evan Sharpley is fine with it. But the other side of it.
Well, I don't know if I'm fine with it. I think athletes are always going to try to beat the system. That's my thought. If you look across all of sports, I mean, Olympic athletes are probably the biggest abusers. You look within cycling. I mean, it's well documented on, you know, whether it's blood doping, whether it's PED use, it's HGH, it's testosterone.
Right.
If there is a rule, an athlete is going to try to break that rule if they can get an edge, if they are trying to be one of the, you know, in that top 1%. How can I get just a little bit better? So if that's the case, just make it legal and let them choose.
Well, here's one of the things, one of the problems that I have is not all PEDs are the same.
Yes.
As well. And you can speak to this a little bit more, because you've got some guys who essentially have admitted to taking the wrong over-the-counter type supplement, where then you've got other guys like McGuire and, you know, whether it was Clemens with the needles and the whole thing. Not all PEDs.
I think Bonds
are
had the best.
Nice,
he had the best
box.
Hookup. He just had to rub it in.
That's right.
The cream and the clear, baby.
That's right. That's it. That's exactly.
Yeah,
it.
They, you know, it is different. There's different. You know, some guys are taking, you know, greenies or amphetamines for energy boost. You know, for a long season to make sure that, you know, you're playing, you know, every night for 3 to 4 hours. You've got usually a plane ride to catch, and you're flying cross country.
Just a few extra cups of coffee.
Yeah, the coffee. I mean, it's, you know, at some point, I think guys are starting to look. You know, they start to look for something a little bit more, and from that, a strength and conditioning and a performance side of things. If you're willing to start to experiment with putting some outside sources in your body, and you're seeing the results that you want, I mean, it was pretty clear to see. I mean, you look at a guy like Bonds now. You look at a guy like McGuire now. They don't look anything like they were when they were playing. And it's not that they stopped being active and working out. It was they weren't on those products anymore.
Yeah.
You see it in their jawline. I mean, you saw it everywhere. So
yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, we'll take a timeout. When we come back, we're going to talk a little football out here at Four Winds Casino, South Bend. Leprechaun Lunch, Sean and Sharpley, were brought to you by the Trattoria at McCree's, a unique pasta bar offering made-from-scratch pastas from old-world Italian recipes. Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, contact Tark in South Bend, or Matt Carroll in Mishawaka. Food Bank of Northern Indiana, together we can solve hunger. Learn more at feedindiana.org. By Kurt Outdoor Living, make plans now to transform your backyard into an oasis with the experts at Kurt Outdoor Living. Beef O'Brady's of Granger, where game time meets family time, corner of State Road 23. And, of course, also by Sharpley Training with us, you can be a champion. We'll take a timeout. Back to talk some football live from Four Winds Casino, South Bend. Giving away the green hats and the DeWalt radio today. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Coming to you live from Four Winds Casino, South Bend. Stop on out and see us. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. All day today, starting at 1 o'clock, Four Winds is giving away shares of $50,000 in cash and prizes. There's going to be a new drawing every hour, starting at 1 and going until 10 o'clock tonight. TV, cash, all kinds of stuff. So stop on by today. Four Winds Casino, South Bend, great place to watch all kinds of games. You can stop out here tomorrow afternoon at Kankakee Grill. And Notre Dame and Virginia basketball game is sold out tomorrow, and so is the Duke game Monday night. So if you can't get in, if you don't have tickets, come on out to Four Winds Casino and watch it in the Kankakee Grill. Good place to do it. With Evan Sharpley, I'm Sean Stiers. And also tonight, we've got Mishawaka versus Penn basketball. And Dean Huppert is going to join us at halftime tonight. You may have seen this week. Have you seen the stuff about Mishawaka Penn? You know, Mishawaka is going to the NLC.
Yeah.
And there was a report in the Penn student paper about how the series is going to be discontinued for at least 2020 and 2021. Pump the brakes on that, though, because according to Dean Huppert, the Mishawaka athletic director, it's looking like 2021 or I want to get my dates right. 2020 probably will not happen because of Penn's existing non-conference schedule. But the last I heard from Dean Huppert was just a couple days ago, and he's going to join us tonight at halftime to talk about it. 2021, they're still working on.
Yeah.
And part of the report in the Penn student paper said, well, Mishawaka Marion is going to take Mishawaka's place on the schedule. Now, technically that's true, but that has nothing to do with the non-conference schedule, because what's going to happen, Mishawaka is going to leave the NIC to join the NLC, so Marion is going to go from the NIC South to the NIC North, so they are essentially taking Mishawaka's place on the NIC North schedule.
Gotcha.
That has nothing to do with non-conference schedules. So those are two completely different things. And again, Dean Huppert will join us tonight at halftime.
Dean will get it figured out.
Yeah. And I know he was talking to Jeff Hart, and they're still working on the Penn AD, and they're still working on all that. So they are still hopeful that they will be able to play the Backyard Brawl in 2021. Conference change. I mean, you see it in college sports. I mean, things happen where you go your separate ways. Not everything is guaranteed. But Dean Huppert assured me that they're still working on making it happen.
I'd put good money on it happening in 2021. You know, Penn is always looking to play out of conference games early on. I mean, that's why they travel to Michigan. They usually have a home and a home against a Michigan school.
Right.
They've been playing St. Mary's and Brother Rice recently over the last 4 or 5 years. You know, most schools in Indiana, especially teams that, you know, 6A Penn is going to play later in the playoffs, teams maybe down in Fort Wayne or Indianapolis, don't want to play Penn early on in a non-conference because they're probably going to see them in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So that's why Penn started, you know, going and playing in Michigan. So now that they're not in the same conference, you know, I think that Mishawaka would make sense. I'd be curious as to when it would be. It might be early in the season.
Yeah, most likely it would have to be. But again, some of those early schedules, who knows? And I've also talked to some people connected
to the NIC. Their conference schedule revolves on a four-year basis, and this coming year was, or last year was supposed to be the last year on that four-year sort of revolve, mm-hmm. but they have added this year to it, sort of extended one extra year because of, you know, because Mishawaka will still be in the NIC this year, so they'll keep that, and then when Mishawaka leaves, that's when their new revolving conference okay. slate will begin. So I know it gets a little bit complicated, but that's what happens when you've got teams coming and going and stuff
like that. A little
shuffle up. So, yep, that's right. Big controversy, of course, in the AFC and NFC championship games. The pass interference that wasn't called on the Rams led to them beating the Saints in overtime to go to the Super Bowl for the first time since 2001. And a couple, a lot of different stuff has come.
There's been some great stuff coming.
Oh
to this,
man,
huh?
I tell you, there's been lawsuits filed, petitions filed. A betting service, actually, the latest in the New Jersey mobile betting market, announced that they had refunded all wagers on New Orleans Saints spreads and money lines due to the highly controversial
that?
Call. I don't know that that's a good idea, that you want to be setting that kind of precedent, you know, because there's always going to be...
It's a rocky road.
Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be some kind of call that can set things off, it seems like.
Yeah, that's... I don't... Yeah, that's a slippery slope right yeah. there, once you open up that door.
The New Orleans Times Advocate listed the Super Bowl, the TV listing, in yesterday's paper like this. They had the helmets. You know how you see, like, in the paper, mm-hmm. there's a Patriots helmet and then the opponent helmet. Well, the Patriots helmet had the actual logo. The other helmet had an asterisk for the logo in there. And then under when the game is, it says, who cares? Under where, it says, some dump. For TV, it says, whatever. And then the last part of the listing, there's an asterisk that says, we was robbed.
Tell us how you really feel.
Yeah, so they're obviously not taking things very well down in New Orleans after all this. What would you say to Saints fans, Evan?
Wah, wah. I mean, it's tough. I mean, I feel for them. It's terrible, you know, but it's a human game. You've got humans that are making some of these subjective calls, and they blew it.
I mean, yeah.
It doesn't get much clearer than that, though, on a missed PI call. I mean, I don't know how you don't throw a flag there. I mean, there was absolutely no attempt to go after the football. And
well, and then there are replays where I saw where the guy who was closest to it apparently was thinking about it,
and then
the other ref waved him off.
Yeah, that's
which I don't get.
I don't get it either. You know, it's but again, I mean, you look at some of the fallout from it, some lawsuits. You know, Roger being able to enact a clause where they could actually play the game from that.
Right, they want them to play the game over from
you
that
know,
point.
All of those.
By the
things.
Way, here's a newsflash. The game went to overtime, and the Saints had the ball first.
Correct.
And your Hall of Fame quarterback threw a horrible interception on the first drive.
And how come nobody's talking about an overtime? They want to look at the reviewing the overtime rules in that game.
Yeah,
no
exactly.
No one's talking about that one.
Exactly.
Yeah, so there are opportunities. And, you know, a football game is more than one play, but that was a big play, and it obviously was a missed call. And there's going to be some tough calls.
I mean, there's always going to be tough calls no matter
it's
what.
Just, it was at such a, you know, such a crucial point of the game and, you know, possibly sending your team to the Super Bowl.
I mean, I realize it stinks, and that play literally, yeah, it did swing because if pass interference or targeting, helmet to helmet, any of that stuff is called, any of those three things could have been called.
Game's probably over. Saints
then,
win.
Well, yeah, the Saints can run the clock out. They still have to kick the field goal or a touchdown or whatever. You've still got to score as appropriate. But I mean, they also blew a 13-0 lead at home
mm-hmm.
Again with a Hall of Fame quarterback against a young quarterback. So they had their chances. It's hard for me to get that worked up, and I hate to generalize a group of fans. But my own personal experience, when I went to Dallas to see the Cowboys and the Saints in early December, we had a group of Saints fans sitting in front of us, and quite frankly, they're acting like this whole group of Saints fans is acting right now. They're babies about everything. So I just get over it. We've all watched a game where we've got rooting interest, and calls have gone against our team. And I mean, it's unfortunate that something that egregious happened in that big a time. But the one thing that I would say is the initial camera angle that I saw where it's from the other side, because the one that we see right now is the low angle where the play's coming right at you. But the original play where the referee was behind the referee, it does look like the hit and the ball are all there at the same time. Yeah. But we don't see that angle because that's not the most egregious angle. So if it were you, Evan, everyone's talking about the instant replay rule now. So if Evan Sharpley could come up with his own instant replay rule, what would it look like?
That's a tough line to cross. I don't know if there's a win here on this. You know, if you open it up and say, you know, we're gonna in these types of situations, maybe if it's within the last 2 minutes of a half, 2 minutes of the game, well, what if it happens with 2 minutes and 1 second? I mean, that's the thing, is where do you draw the line? And once you draw that line,
and
how
what
are
penalties
you gonna,
are you going to look
how
at?
How are you going to enact those? Exactly. I mean, the stipulations, at least in my mind, it's almost too broad, and there's too many problems that you could really have here. So, I mean, if you review each play throughout an entire game, you can probably find a penalty on each play.
And that's the thing. I mean, face masking, holding, personal fouls. In both games on Sunday, we saw bad calls on all of them.
Yeah,
so
the roughing the passer on Tom Brady was terrible.
Right.
You know, what are you going to do? You're going to say, nope, that wasn't, you know, I mean, I don't know. I think, though, the perception right now, because of the timing of it, the backlash, you know, since it's happened, I don't know if the NFL is going to position themselves to update the type of, you know, instant replays and what they can do as far as reviews. But, the system has improved so much. You know, prior to instant replay, there would be calls that would miss that wouldn't get overturned. And now I think you're getting them right more times than not. But, you know, this is a call that really is a judgment call by the referee.
Well, and the word that you've heard that even if the NFL changed their instant replay rule to include pass interference or whatever it happens to be, and Bill Belichick has been in favor of being able to challenge anything, what they're saying is you're only going to be able to challenge, like if a flag is thrown, you're only going to be able to challenge whether or not that actually is a penalty. Like this specific thing, you couldn't go back and challenge because it wasn't flagged on the field, which I get as well, because again, are you going to open it up to everything on every play? And Tony Dungy, I think it was on the Dan Patrick Show, made a great point this week. What if you challenge a pass interference, and then in the process of looking at that pass interference,
there's a holding call.
You see a holding call.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Where does it end? It's just
there are eight flags on this play.
Exactly right. So then in that case, you're just talking about offsetting penalties potentially anyway. But you've got to put limits on it. I think that maybe because we do have instant replay, the guy in the booth should maybe be able to have more of a say in what's going on. Like if he can contact,
like, guys, you really messed up,
yeah,
right there.
Like if
you
he know, can contact the field in a certain amount of time, yeah, go back and say, okay, you need to throw a flag.
Yeah.
That kind of thing, because they're sitting up there. That technology is obviously available. Now, what do you think about the other big controversy was overtime? Tom Brady gets the ball first. Fun fact number one: Tom Brady's played in 3 postseason overtimes. His opponents have never touched the ball in any of them in his NFL.
It's rigged, right?
Career. Yeah, exactly. So do you think the overtime rule needs changing in the NFL?
Well, everyone is speaking out about this because it's Tom Brady.
Let's be real here. That's what I said from the very beginning. If it was the Chiefs, would anybody
care? Nobody would have said anything. They wouldn't said anything, but it's Tom Brady, and he gets the ball and puts a clinic on with the offense going down the field and scoring, and they go to the Super Bowl. Do I have opinion on the rule? Yes, I hate it. I don't like it. I think that what we should do is maybe have a cage match to decide who gets the ball, maybe like arm wrestling, or you roll out your guy who has the heaviest one rep max on, you know, a squat attempt.
Uh-huh.
Let's do it that way, you know. But, you know, truth be told, you know, I think it needs to be updated. I've never been a big fan of a coin flip deciding, you know, whether or not who gets the ball in overtime.
Like, I don't mind the college rule, but maybe you put it at the 40 or 50 or something like that.
I like the college rule. I mean, I think it makes the game more exciting to give both teams an opportunity to go score the football.
Yeah.
You know, then I think what the NFL can do is they can look at, you know, do we start going for two, similar to what college does? That's where there maybe can be some variation between college and pro. But at the same time, I'm going to let you take it over because you're going to drop another fun fact here.
That's right.
We're going to find out it really doesn't matter.
Really doesn't matter. And I think this is Ross Tucker that I saw tweet this week. Fun fact number two. The overtime coin toss winner winning percentage in the NFL, if you win the coin toss, the winning percentage is 52.7%.
So it's a coin flip if you win the coin flip.
Yeah. It's a little bit better than 50%. In college football, it's just under 55%. So there's only about 2% difference. Even though both teams get the ball in college, you still only have a 2% better chance of winning the game if you get the ball first. So it really doesn't matter that much. And I mean, I go back to the fact, again, like for all this outcry about change the rule, one, Drew Brees had the ball, the first possession at home. He threw an interception. It didn't matter. Lost the game. Yeah, that's right. Nobody talked about that one. And two, you know, I was critical of how maybe Andy Reid maybe scored too soon on the Chiefs' last possession before, well, not last, second to the last possession.
The Patriots even left 39 seconds
on
the clock.
See, but that's the thing. Brady, the Patriots scored the touchdown after that. After the Chiefs scored a touchdown right before the 2-minute warning, the Patriots had all three touchdowns or all three timeouts. They didn't even need to use a timeout. Mm-hmm. They go down and they score. The Chiefs come back, kick a field goal to send it to overtime. So, I mean, none of that stuff mattered. But Andy Reid still had an opportunity before they kicked that field goal to potentially go for a touchdown, but he decided to play it safe. He had wasted a timeout earlier. So, I mean, the Chiefs still had chances before any of that stuff happened is what it all comes down to. We'll take a timeout. When we come back, we'll talk some more football. Tony Romo included. He was
your guy.
That's right. He was the star of conference championship weekend. So we'll do all that and more when we return. Four Winds Casino, South Bend. Stop on by today until 10 o'clock tonight for a chance to win your share of $50,000 in cash and prizes. There is a drawing going on every hour from 1 o'clock until 10 o'clock tonight. You can also still stop by and get the free limited edition green Shamrock baseball caps. He's Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Steyer. Sean and Sharpley, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sean and Sharpley coming to you from Four Winds Casino, South Bend. Stop by. Well, you've got just a couple more minutes, but if you scoot in the door maybe a little after one, we'll still give you one of the green hats. But you can come by all day today because starting here in 6 minutes at 1 o'clock every hour, they're going to be drawing, giving away cash and prizes, a total value up to $50,000. So every hour, including a TV, just in time for the big game a week from Sunday. So we were just talking about the conference championship games, Evan, and I think far and away the guy who came out the star of last Sunday was Tony Romo, the Sunday broadcast.
Is that a pun? The star?
Hey, there you go.
Based on the logo?
That's
yeah,
right.
Okay. He was great. I don't watch too many NFL games. I watched the two playoff games. Mm-hmm. He was really good. You know, he was genuine. He was authentic. And the last drive, he called perfectly before each play.
And I think that's what really got everyone going.
You know, as the play is about to be snapped, he's like, he drew on there, these two guys are going to chip, this the chip here, and you're going to throw it over the middle.
No, gentlemen, over the middle.
And then they do the same thing. And then the last one that he called perfectly was to Gronk on a slant. ISO, he goes, watch Gronk up at the top. He goes, now, he circles the safety. He goes, now watch the safety. I'm
down.
Just watching the safety move. I'm like, yeah, he's moving down. Oh, he's probably going to throw it out there to Gronk. I was like, oh, okay.
Boom.
Nice job.
And I mean, I saw
Bryce Harper tweet at him and say, hey, you know, since you called all, you know, all those plays, he goes, you're going to let me know where I'm playing next year.
Ask Romo where I'm going to be playing next year. When you watch a game, Evan, because he obviously sees it as a as a former quarterback, and a quarterback that I think it was just last week someone was talking about Romo, and they were saying 2013, where he was really coming into his own, like on the field, as far as seeing things, making shifts, adjustments and stuff, the protections and all that different kinds of stuff. When you watch a game now, do you look at any of that kind of stuff, or are you just looking
That's
at
all
outcome?
I can see.
Yeah.
It's all I can see. It's ingrained now. You know, you watch so much film in college. You're looking at coverages. You're looking at alignment and leverage. I watched the national championship game from one of the views from behind the quarterback, actually.
On one of the alternate channels.
Yeah, there's an alternate channel where you're not hearing any of the commentators, but it's from the quarterback's vantage point, so I can see all of those things. I think it's, you know, for me and my background, you know, I just think it's a fun way to watch because it gives you a new appreciation for how fast the game is occurring, and then also checks that, you know, what the quarterback sees.
How good are you? Do you make your predictions like Romo does?
Sometimes. And honestly, watching the Patriots, I love watching the Patriots because that's the offense I ran for 5 years.
That's true.
So, you know, I heard Brady make a Rita call, and I'm like, I know what that is.
Rita. Sean and Chaplin, the Leprechaun Lunch, we're brought to you by Food Bank of Northern Indiana, Kern Outdoor Living, Trattoria, McCree's, Edward Jones, Beef O'Brady's of Granger, and we'll be back at Five Star Dive Bar in Elkhart next week as well. So we are winding down. Don't forget, stop by Four Winds Casino until 10 o'clock tonight. Every hour they're making cash and prize drawings, giving away $50,000 total in cash and prizes today. Good stuff today. Had fun. We will see you next week.
Sounds good.
Drive safely and stay warm. 96.1 WSBT South Bend.